Hello everybody, and indeed today is the 9th of February 2015. This is me, Sami Shah, right here behind the microphone as well as behind the steering wheel. I am currently driving a car that was loaned to me by the family friends I'm staying with in Perth. I am still in Perth. The fringe world is still very much going on and I am still very tired. Not as tired as before. I actually recorded an entire podcast. One more of the roving podcast types that I did with excerpts from different parts of my day and such. But then I was so exhausted while recording it. This was 4 days ago that the audio, I didn't get a chance to like do an audio check before recording. And the audio was absolutely terrible with too much, with the microphone banging against the side of my bag and things like that. So I had to delete an entire thing. There might be some excerpts of natural sound that I'll still stick in here. There's one little bit that I really enjoyed, which I'll stick in at some point, which is a taxi driver ranting that I had. That was just a fun little thing that I experienced. But other than that, it's been a long fringe, my friends. It's still going on, and it does not help that Perth has been experiencing an unbelievably terrible heat wave, like a particularly terrible heat wave compared to even Perth's heat waves, where it's been 43 degrees Celsius. I don't know that in the Fahrenheit because no one gives a fuck. But yeah, 43 degrees Celsius every single day for the last 2 days, and that has been brutal, absolutely brutal to me, particularly. We'll have the car right now in the evenings, which has been great. But during the day, I'm on foot and I'm on public transport. And I have to get out because I'm conducting interviews for the project I'm doing for the ABC. One of the projects I'm doing. I need to give code names to the projects I'm doing for the ABC. Let's say if one of the projects is Project Epsilon and the other one is Project Alpha. Project Epsilon is the bigger one. That's the one that they'll probably go on until mid-May. And so yeah, that's been the one that I'm busiest with, and so I'm recording a bunch of radio interviews because it is for Radio National. And so that means lugging about a very professional radio recording kit with very professional microphones and mic stands and stuff, which are, do not weigh little. They weigh quite a bit. That sentence went nowhere. But yeah, I've been walking around with those and recording interviews with people and meeting a bunch of people, and that has been, in this heat, just the worst. By the time I get to the interview, I look disheveled and my shirt is basically been absorbed into my back at that point, like a twin absorbing another in the womb. And then once the interview is done, I go back home, I shower, change, and then I go for another interview. And I shower, change thrice today as well. I did that yesterday. And the day before, the last 2 days, I haven't had any gigs, which have been lucky. I have some time off from Islamofarcist, which I will now tell you about. So the last we spoke, I had just very triumphantly finished writing Islamofarcist. I believe I still had 2 days to go before the show kind of debuted. And I'd taken a day off from reading the script that I'd written. As you know, it was a script that I wrote a week before the show was going to happen. And 2 days before, I finished it and took a day off. And then one day before, in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, deprived entirely of sleep for several days at that point because of the Perth fringe and the partying and the debauched lifestyle that I am entirely too old to be leading, I sat down and read the script. And it was the first kind of cold reading of my own words that I'd done in a while. And I hated it. I hated every inch of it. It was self-indulgent. It wasn't funny. It was pompous and self-righteous. And it had nothing in it that was worth putting on stage with my name on it. And I would have embarrassed myself. And I would have insulted the audience's intelligence for being there. And I went into a white-hot kind of panic. I then spent the next 7 hours throwing out everything and rewriting the entire 25-page script, redoing all the animation slides, just basically doing it all from scratch. I then went to the fringe because if I had to spend one more moment looking at the computer screen, I was going to lose my mind. The show was starting the next day and I just needed a break. And I'm walking around the fringe and I kind of went down that spiral that happens. It's like when I go through these work phases where, if you guys remember, like two, three episodes ago, I was, you know, which maybe 2 months back or something, I was bored and I didn't have much going on because all the projects that I wanted to do weren't happening yet. I was in the setup phase, and that's how it happens. I spent 7 months setting up projects, and then I spent like a white heat for 2-3 weeks when I you know, produce all of them, then spend several months again setting them up. And when I'm in that setup phase, I'm bored and I'm shiftless and I'm lonely and I'm frustrated because nothing's happening. And that's when the comedy club gigs, like the regular gigging, kind of helps. It comes in handy. And lacking those in Melbourne, the regular gigging, you know, being a part of regular gigging cycles, which I haven't really gotten into still over there, I was particularly bored and felt utterly useless. And then to go through this phase, what happens is once the writing starts, once the productivity starts, when I take a break from the productivity, when I'm not actually looking at words on a screen, because you need to take that break sometimes or you lose your mind, I just spiral. And I think the spiraling is kind of getting worse the older I get, where I'm just walking around questioning every decision I've made, questioning my creativity, questioning my productivity, my output, my reasons for existence, if you will. And I was going down that rabbit hole, which is an analogy I really hate. I really do. I get it's a reference to Alice in Wonderland and everything. But anyway, so I was walking around the fringe, just misery etched on my face, and nervous energy kind of fuming out of me like pheromones. And I turned a corner and I bumped into Sean Conway, who is a comedian friend of mine, very, very good friend of mine. And Sean Conway's a big guy, and he said that I chest-bumped him with such aggression that I almost bowled him over. And then he took one look at me, and he's like, "What's wrong, man?" And I was like, I'm spiraling, dude. I'm not doing good." And he's like, "Come with me." And he took me to a bar, and we sat down. We had a few drinks, and we just chatted about our shows and life and things like that, and that helped. And then I bumped into Craig Quatermain, who is a Perth comic who I adore and think he's fucking hilarious. He's going to be huge one day. And I had him open for me at the Punching Down shows. And with him was Brendan Burns, who's, of course, a comedy legend and a huge name and notoriously famous in the comedy industry. And the two of them are hanging out, and then they joined us. So it was Sean Conway, me, Brendan Burns, and Craig Quatermain. And just doing the thing that comedians do, which is you just bust balls. You just rip into each other, and you make fun of one another, ridicule one another, and you mock, and you belittle, and you do the things that close friends do, basically. All we're doing is what close friends do to one another. But because you're comedians, even if you're not close friends, you already know the shorthand of each other's life experiences. You know perspectives and things just with one word a sentence, because that's what our skill is. We read a crowd and we know each other. And just ripping into each other and making each other feel good about life by making each other feel bad, which helped me a lot. It really did. It helped me a lot. It helped me go back that night. Go to sleep like a baby, wake up the next morning, go to the fringe and just start, you know, sit in a corner practicing and rehearsing the words of the screen on the screen. And then we had the first night of the show, and I get up on stage and I look out of the audience, and it's a 110 seater room in which there was about 80 people, and they'd never seen the show. I had never seen the show. I was debuting it then and there for them, and no one had ever seen it before or heard it before. And I look out, and the only person that the spotlight, you know, kind of picks out, because he has graying hair and seems silver almost in the light, was David Zampatti, who is the senior most reviewer for the West Australian newspaper, who's one of the most senior voices in theatrical and arts reviews in Australia, in Western Australia at the very least. And he's sitting there, and he's got a notepad out, and he's taking notes on everything I say. And I blink and I breathe and I start the show and I finish the show. And I don't fumble really. I think I miss one point and I circle back for it. But it flows out fairly well. The slides and everything work very well. There's no glitches as such. And then I go out and I don't care how it went, whether it went well or badly. And David Zampatti comes up to me and he goes, "Do you mind if I review the first night? Because I know it is the first night. When did you finish writing the show?" I was like, "I finished writing it this morning, like last night." So, you know what? You reviewed tonight, you reviewed 4 nights from now. It doesn't matter. Go ahead and review it. And he did. And the next morning, the review comes out, and it's a 4.5-star review out of 5, not out of 10. And he says it's the best show he's seen at the Fringe. And then Islamo Farcist, on its debut night, gets nominated for the Best Comedy Award and the Arts Editor Award, which is a far more prestigious award to be nominated within. And I don't know how that happened. And I know I'm going to sound like I'm trying to be modest and all those things. It's a fucking amazing feeling. It's insane that it happened. Especially when I was just whining and complaining the day before that I've never been nominated for anything at the Fringe and what's a guy got to do? But it did happen. And I still am not sure how. And I'm very, very... When these things happen, I don't feel as if I did anything. I feel as if the show wrote itself. And my name's attached to it. And that's how it is. And I know that sounds pretentious and wanky and whatever. But shut up. I've been hanging out at the Fringe Festival where we're allowed to be pretentious and wanky. And this is our safe space. God damn it. How dare you judge me? You take your judgment elsewhere. I'll have you. Since then, it's just been a lot of... I did the show for 4 more days. I did silent disco DJing where I just had a great time. I do the shows. I go to DJ silent discos, which I think I explained last time. It's basically everyone puts on headphones and it's a dance floor set up with a DJ, the DJ being myself in this case, in some nights, and audience members rock out and you just dance and it's a proper disco. But if you're standing outside it, it looks like the world's strangest zombie melee. But if you're within it, it's a wall of sound that kind of just takes over your world. It's fantastic. So I did that, and then I go to the artist bar, and we'd all just hang out there. We'd all just spend time there and just be artists and other performers and me being grateful for being part of a community, which, again, I can't explain how much. I've always felt like I was on the outside. In Pakistan, when I was doing stand-up comedy, I wasn't Blackfish as part of a community. I always felt like that was my last community I was a part of, which is the improv comedy troupe I was in from 2002 to 2005. But other than that, when I used to do stand-up comedy, there was no stand-up comedy community. There's me and there's another guy, and he did his own thing, and I did my own thing. And then there's all these other communities of the arts, like the music people, and the drama people, and the theater people, and the acting people, and the fashion people. But there was just me. And I always felt alien to them. They didn't get my sense of humor. They didn't get me, and they didn't get any other things. They were, for lack of a better word, a normal artists. They weren't freaks and geeks like I aspired to be. And so when I'm at the Fringe artist bar and I'm just surrounded by other people like me, other freaks and things, and burlesque dancers and cabaret people and musicians and just, you know, fringers. It's great. I feel welcome. I feel whole. And it sounds cliched and stupid, but I feel like that's my tribe. And I had this moment. I was talking to this other comedian from Sydney, Luke Joseph Ryan. Very tall, very funny man. And he and I were chatting in the artist bar. And just artists there. And then some artists, because you're allowed to bring in a plus one, bring in punters, bring in civilians, normal people. And you can tell who they are right away just by the way they dress and the way they carry themselves and the wide-eyed wonder look that they have on them. And as they see, you know, almost naked burlesque dancers walking by carrying beers and playing table tennis with feathered cabaret singers who are, you know, engaged in heated conversations with sarcastic comedians. And all these people, these civilians kind of walk in. And so there's this one woman, a beautiful woman, and she's a cabaret singer, and she's wearing an elaborate hat, a fantastic hat. And she's going to the bar to get a drink, and there's a civilian following her, and he catches our eye for some reason. He turns to us, and he goes, you know what they say about chicks with hats, right? Like and we're like, no, what do they say about chicks with hats, my friend? And he goes, oh, they're fucking crazy. And Luke Joseph Ryan and I both puff up right then and there, and because we're like, this, no, fuck you, this is our space, you don't get to talk like that about our people. And we basically heckled that man till he left. It was extremely entertaining just to heckle a man in the middle of a bar, not in a comedy club setting, in the middle of a bar, belittling him, belittling his dress sense, belittling his life choices, belittling everything about him until he just walked out with his self-esteem in shambles. So that was a nice bit of, you know, justice that we meted out there. Other than that, it's been great. It's been fantastic. There's been lots of food. I've put on a lot of weight since I got here. I haven't exercised, I haven't run, I haven't done anything except eat and perform and sweat. And the sweating you think would help, but it doesn't help as much as it should. But no, it's been... good. It's been, you know what it is? It's, I now understand the addiction to fringes. Because there's a whole group of people here who, this is what they do, man. They are, they're fringe folken. You know, they come here, they do this, and they go to Adelaide. They go to the Adelaide Fringe, from there they go to New Zealand, they go to over there, then from New Zealand they go to the Melbourne Comedy Festival or some one of those, and they go to Edinburgh Fringe, from Edinburgh they'll go to Sydney, from Sydney they'll go to Melbourne again, from Melbourne they go, and they'll just do that all year round, and then they'll be back here again in Perth Fringe next, you know, January, February, and that's their life. And I always wondered about them, like, why they would do that, but now I don't. Because it's very addictive. You're just around people who are of the same kind and who don't have day jobs and who keep the same strange evening hours as you do and who are just as strange and weird and damaged and fun and funny and all those things. And there is, and if I wish I was younger, it's probably a midlife crisis thing that I'm talking about right now, but I do wish I had this option when I was younger, because I see all of them and they're all in their 20s. And they've made these decisions when they were young to do, you know, pursue these lives. I didn't have that. The decisions I made, you know, to pursue when I was young were decisions made for me, which were like, oh, you'll be a banker, or a lawyer, an accountant, or whatever. And I fought against that. And I did English, and I became, went into advertising. And that was my act of rebellion. And then a journalist, and that was an act of rebellion. And then I did stand-up comedy on the side. But if I lived in a country like this, and I had, you know, the option to just be a comedian when I was 18 and do that, and then, you know, just travel doing fringes and things like that, I definitely would have taken it. I definitely want Anya to have those options. Maybe she doesn't want to. Maybe she grows to become an accountant and a doctor and a lawyer, but that option is available to her, which I think is a wonderful thing, because I really would have liked to have had it. What else should I tell you guys about? You know what? Tell you what. We'll take a break right now. In this break, I will play you an audio excerpt from a taxi driver. I've been taking a lot of taxis and Ubers and such, and I'll tell you about that in a bit as well. Like, okay, so the thing I find about, interesting about Uber is every Uber driver I've spoken to has been brown, usually. An Indian guy, or Pakistani guy, or like one, or the other, sorry, a Somali Muslim guy. And it almost, it basically saved their lives. It's people without jobs, without, you know, who just, who are, or who are studying and had no money and no careers and things like that, and or they're immigrants and they couldn't get a job. And Uber, they do this and they do it all day long, and it saved their life. And a lot of people, it's a weird thing where Uber has a lot of, you know, conflict around it and a lot of controversy around it. But that's an aspect of the discussion I don't think you see or hear anywhere, which is that a lot of people doing the Uber thing are doing it because they didn't have a choice, and now it's putting food on their tables. It's putting a lot of food on a lot of people's tables, and maybe that's not fair to the taxi drivers who are now losing food from their tables, but then maybe the taxi industry, I don't know, there's ethics involved there, a whole separate discussion about economics and financing of taxi industry versus Uber and stuff, which we'll get into some other day on some other episode of the podcast, which you can definitely avoid, because that'd probably be the most boring edition of my podcast ever. But in the meantime, this is the sound of a taxi driver a week ago who, I sat in his cab, and all I asked him at like late at night, I was like, how's it going? And he then went on a 25-minute rant about how it was going in Hindi, which was the funniest goddamn thing I've heard all day. And it should have been a monologue at a fringe festival. And the entire rant was basically him going on about how life sucks because Pakistan and India don't get their shit sorted out as countries. And he keeps using the word Benchot or Ben. He keeps using Benchot, and Benchot, for those of you who don't know, is sister fucker in Hindi. So, you know, I apologize in advance for the sensitive ears if you don't know that translation, and if you do know that translation, regardless. So here's an audio excerpt of taxi driver ranting, and then I'll get back to you guys.
जब हाँ मानने भाई बहन जो हम भी पूरे वो है तुम भी पूरे वो है भाई कोई भूखा नहीं मर रहा कि सब पे रोजगार नहीं है कोई सब पे नौकरियां अच्छी तब तो लड़ते हुए अच्छे लगे बहन जो तुम तो दुनिया से 50 साल पीछे जाओगे है नहीं भाई
Hey, trying to figure out what to watch. I can make a recommendation. It's a friend of mine. It's on my show. It's this one. It's on today, and it's really good. I actually watched it day before yesterday, and it was one of those things where I was like, I wish I'd written that show because it was that good. And if you watch that one, then you can, you know, come to my show tomorrow, which I have written, which is this show, which is Slam of Artists. It's on tomorrow, 6:45 p.m. at Noodle Palace, which is at the Tate Building.
At the top there, yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one's done. That's the previous show that's finished. Yep, same face. I feel this is more me, though. I think this is more the likeness. But the cool part about the Slam of Artists show is that it's been nominated for 2 major awards and been given a 4.5-star review in the West Australian. So it's not bad. That means it's good, which is a great thing for me to be able to say. And the biggest reason why you should come to that is because my venue is air-conditioned. And I did that just for you, for you. So I hope to see you there. Thank you very much. So yeah, that was me flying around about the Perth Fringe. I'm walking across now to Noodle Palace, which is my main venue, which is where I've been for 4 years now. I was with Noodle Palace when Noodle Palace was just a noodle restaurant on the center of Perth with these tiny rooms. And now it is indeed a palace. And they, you know, and I have the Sober Stadium, which is their biggest room. And they've given it to me every year for the last 3 years. They take care of me, and I appreciate that. I really do. But yeah, it's been a long fringe. I love it and I'm addicted to it, but I miss my daughter. I want to go home. She got a haircut and daddy wasn't there for it. And then the other day I was on the phone and I was asking, I was like, how are things? How are you doing? And I was on the bus and we were talking to her and she says, things aren't the same without you. And I just started weeping, just openly weeping on the bus in the middle of Perth like a crazy person. Because, yeah, I'm not cut out for this. That's the one thing. I wish I'd done this when I was younger. Because I can't do it anymore. I can't live this life this age. And professionally, it should be. Which is why I've been trying to find other ways of doing this. How to sustain being a full-time comedian without ever, you know, without having to actually gig a lot, without having to travel a lot, without doing all of those things that you end up doing as a full-time comedian, because I don't want to be one of those guys who's never home. I don't want to be one of those people who's just, his work takes him away from his family every time, and you just, you miss your child, and you miss your children growing up. I haven't been for the last 3.5 years. I've been home every day for her, and this is the longest I've been away from her, and it's torture. It's killing me in that way, and it's part of the reason why I've been partying so hard, maybe. Just to distract myself, which sounds like the lamest excuse. That's what alcoholics say, by the way. Is I was just numbing the pain, and I'm not making that excuse. But it does make me dance harder when I miss her. And you guys know I love to dance. I think it's been a long enough podcast for you guys. I think I'm gonna see if I can punch in some more natural sound from the Fringe Festival. Before, just going to lead you out with like an outro music thing. Until then, I'll catch you next week. Thank you very much. This has been Sammy Shah. You've been listening to Sammy Says. www.sammyshah.com. This is SammyShah.com, facebook.com/sammyshah.fans. sammyshah@gmail.com is where you can contact me. twitter.com/sammyshah. And I'll see you guys around. Have a good one. That's well coordinated, sir. I like the plaid with the flowers thing. What are you guys watching?
Last Soiree, yes,
everyone's watching Last Soiree. But once you watch Last Soiree today and have an amazing day and you're like, I want to watch more Fringe, then you can come to my show tomorrow, which is on at the Noodle Palace, which is right over there. It's the old Tate Building. And I'm doing a 1-hour show. It's been nominated for 2 awards, the Best Comedy, Best Arts, as well as got a 4.5-star review in the West Australian. So it's kind of a good show, I promise. I wouldn't make that up. And you can go home and Google it in case my face is untrustworthy. And the most important selling point of this show is the fact that I have an air-conditioned venue.
Okay,
that's really all you need, to be honest, is that. And that's why I'm going to be there. That's my old one. That show's finished now. But this one's still going on. And that's for you entirely.
If you're in the area,
and you're looking like that, I would like to have you in the area. So thank you very much for coming by.